Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. 2008 is over, and what a year it was in the commodity markets. We'll review it all today with University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist, Daryl Good. The way the markets finished the week ending January the 2nd, 2009. March wheat this week had a high of $6.16, a low at $5.84¾, and settled at $6.11, up 11¾. July wheat futures $6.34½, up 11½, and the March corn a high this week of $4.14½, a low at $3.76¼. The change on the week for the March corn? Not at all, at $4.12¼. December corn futures finished a quarter of a cent lower at $4.56½. January soybeans had a high of $9.85¾ on the week, the low at $9.30¼. Settlement price up 18¼ at $9.70 for the January soybeans. November at $10.03½ finished 24 cents higher than last Friday's close. The live cattle February contract at the Mercantile Exchange had a high this week of $89.05, a low at $84.95, and a settlement price a buck higher at $87.10. January feeders at $95.60 finished $2.77½ higher. Lean hog futures February contract $63.85, the high, the low at $58.95, and a settlement price there at $63.85, up $4.90 from last week. And the March oats on the week settled $2.12 a bushel, down 19 cents.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Wednesday, December the 30th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason in studio with us today. Daryl Good, University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist. Thanks for being along with us today, Daryl.
My pleasure, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace in this past year. Interesting for the commodities.
No question about it. I mean, in many ways, a record year as we look at the major commodities. Corn, soybeans, and wheat, establishing obviously record high prices in all of those, coming in kind of late spring, early summer of the year. I think three or four factors probably contributed to that. Certainly escalating crude oil prices and energy prices that drove biofuels prices and therefore feedstock prices was one of those factors. We had an extremely strong export demand right across the board, corn, soybeans, and wheat, reflecting some shortage of wheat, particularly around the world, due to small crops the previous 2 years. And then I think we also got into some hoarding around the world. A lot of importing countries worried about stocks. We saw a number of countries limit exports. At the peak of the market, we saw some importers trying to build inventory of wheat, just panicking about supplying folks with food. And then certainly the flooding that took place in the U.S. that raised concerns about the size of the 2008 crops. All of that kind of culminated at those record high prices. And then along comes July, which was a awfully good growing season for corn and soybeans. We turned out to have good crops, and then came September 15th when We found out about financial woes and the meltdown in those markets began and pushed prices down sharply. So, you know, kind of the 6 months from June, July to early December, we really saw commodity prices come down sharply. Corn cash market over $7 to under $3. Soybeans over $15 to under $8. And then we ended the year with kind of a positive note, with corn prices rallying about a dollar during the month of December and soybeans about a dollar and a half. As I think maybe the worst of the news about the financial crisis was over, we did see some maybe bottoming of petroleum prices and some concerns about supply out of South America. So I think we've now made the transition. You know, beginning in mid-September, it was all about demand, what's going to happen to the U.S. and world economies, who's going to be able to afford to buy what. Everything was dictated by the demand side of the market. Now I think it's going to be a bit more two-sided as we move forward. We're going to look at demand, certainly, but also now with the South American harvest coming on in early 2009, acreage and production issues in the U.S., we'll have supply issues influencing the market as well. So I think we'll continue to see some extremely volatile markets. Would not expect us to go back to the highs that we saw in 2008. But I think we could see prices higher than might generally be expected at times during the upcoming year because of supply concerns.
Let's go back to the beginning of the year and maybe take this in pieces and talk about how the rise in commodity prices came about. I suppose we should start with wheat and what happened in that marketplace. Would you, in retrospect, and there was an awful lot of press that said this, call it a food versus fuel problem, or were there other things that were happening? Wheat, generally, we don't think of as a fuel crop, certainly.
No, I think in the case of wheat, it really was a supply issue that in 2006 and again in 2007, world wheat production was extremely small. That was led by really half a crop each year in Australia, which is a major exporter of wheat. And so we were seeing wheat stocks dwindle quite substantially as a result of those two short crop years. And then as commodity prices in general escalated in early 2008, wheat certainly rode that wave. We didn't have so much concern about production of wheat in 2008 like we did in corn and soybeans here in the U.S. But the demand for wheat was extremely strong, exports running red hot. And I think then the panic set in with, you know, users of wheat worried about running out. And that's really what piqued the market in wheat, I think.
And it really showed that there was a huge difference in classes of wheat, and that one class of wheat could really drag up other classes of wheat. For instance, I don't think there was that much worry that we would ever run out of soft red winter wheat right here in the United States. But spring wheat, which trades at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, was a whole different story.
Yeah, the real shortage in the demand was for spring wheat. And, of course, those prices, at least in the futures market, went much higher at the very top of the market than other classes. Hard red winter wheat behind that. And then the thing that had happened on soft red winter, of course, is that we had a fairly large increase in acreage here in the U.S. seeded in the fall of 2007. Harvested in 2008, about a 20% increase in acreage, overall fairly good yields, and actually a surplus of soft red winter wheat. And so while Chicago futures prices were pulled sharply higher by the general world shortage of wheat, soft red winter wheat cash prices really, while were strong, were never nearly as strong as the futures market, and we did experience and continue to experience an extremely weak basis on soft red winter wheat.
This is in part, I suppose, because Chicago seemed the the easiest place, I suppose, for the rest of the world to decide what a price of wheat would be. But really, the contract is set for the Midwest.
Well, because of the delivery specifications on the Chicago wheat contract, which was an Eastern Corn Belt delivery market, it kind of makes it a soft red winter wheat contract, although other classes of wheat are deliverable against that contract. We don't expect that they will be, that if there is delivery, it'll be soft red winter wheat. But the volume is large at Chicago, and it is kind of where price discovery takes place. And I like to think of it, you know, as kind of a generic or a world wheat contract is the way the market looks at the Chicago market. That's where all the trade takes place. And so it does, and some gets decoupled, if you will, from the soft red winter wheat market, because it is viewed more broadly as where the value of wheat is established.
So short supplies of wheat starts the commodities to move higher, and maybe there are other factors there, but one of the primaries. And then we get into the planting season, and it really slows down in the U.S. for both corn and soybeans.
It does. I mean, we had the June rains that were extremely heavy in large parts of the Midwest that slowed planting and flooded existing crops, required a lot of replanting. And the market immediately started to think 1993 all over again. And I think lost track a little bit that the flooding this year was much earlier than in 1993. That came really July. The peak of that was really the last part of July. There was never any opportunity to replant flooded crops, and it was pretty extensive. And of course, what happened in 2008... you were a month or more earlier with the flooding problems, crops could be replanted, and to a large extent, the replants didn't make it to maturity. So we didn't have nearly the production impact from the floods in 2008 that we had in 93, but certainly the market started thinking that we would or could, and that's contributed to the spike that we saw kind of in June, early July.
What else in terms of factors might have been there?
I think the third big one, of course, is energy prices, with crude oil going to $140 plus per barrel, pulling up gasoline and ethanol prices, meant that the profitability was there in ethanol production and allowed them to pay the higher prices for corn. So that demand really never slowed as corn prices worked up, because the margins were still good because of the higher ethanol prices. So that factor, I think, would be the third large one. And then fourth one, related to some extent to supply problems, was the extremely strong demand for U.S. commodities, including wheat. And we were at a kind of a 10-year high, I think, on wheat exports last year.
You know, why was it? I mean, I understand the wheat and short supplies of wheat around the globe, and that may have, or I know that had an impact on wheat exports, but why such demand for corn and soybean?
Well, I think on corn, you would have to say that it was a result of the wheat. Worldwide, we typically feed a lot of wheat to livestock. When there's a short supply of wheat, that forces folks to look for alternatives, and the available crop was U.S. corn. So we did see a lot of corn being exported that probably would not have occurred if wheat had been available in larger supplies. So, and on top of that, we were still in the midst of pretty rapid economic growth. China growing rapidly, India growing rapidly, livestock production expanding. So you had just this very buoyant demand scenario, growing economies, growing incomes, expanding livestock, short wheat. So regardless of price, importers were buying a lot of U.S. corn.
And I suppose it might be important to note that while in the United States we think of corn as the primary feedstock for livestock, that wheat is used around much the globe as the primary feedstuff for livestock.
Right. I mean, I think on an annual basis, supplies being adequate, you know, 15 to 20% of the world wheat crop probably finds its way into livestock rations. So it is a major feed ingredient outside of the U.S., occasionally within the U.S., depending on price and quality, but typically not a large feed component.
There's more to come with University of Illinois Extension's Daryl Good on this January the 2nd edition of Commodity Week. If you'd like to visit our website and listen to the whole program or just parts of it, you can do that. The address is willag.org. Hit the Commodity Week tab. Also on that website, you'll find all sorts of ag programming and a way to sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's all free at willag.org. That's willag.org.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. 2008 was a year filled with significant weather events across the state of Illinois. Northern Illinois ended the 2007-2008 winter season with record or near-record snowfall in many areas. The snow on the ground, combined with heavy rain in northern and central Illinois in mid-February, resulted in serious flooding in parts of Illinois, the first of several major flooding events this year. A wet spring over much of the state set the stage for more flooding. In early June, a thunderstorm complex dumped up to 12 inches of rain on southeastern and parts of central Illinois, sending the Wabash and Embro rivers to near record and record flood levels. Late in June and early July, abnormally heavy rain in eastern Iowa caused major flooding on the Mississippi River. A number of communities in western Illinois were evacuated as levees were breached. After a fairly dry August, heavy rain returned to Illinois as the remnants of two tropical systems moved through the Midwest in September. Gustav and Ike both caused heavy rain, with rain from Ike contributing to record flooding in northern Illinois. November was definitely the transition month. Highs were in the 70s the first 5 days of the month, but the weather was very winter-like by the end. This December was the coldest since 2005, with temperatures ranging from 10 degrees below normal in northern Illinois to 5 below normal in the south. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilbert.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the January 2nd edition of Commodity Week. When we left our conversation with University of Illinois Extension ag economist Daryl Good, we had just outlined four reasons the market went much higher in the first half of the year: short world supplies of wheat, strong demand for U.S. commodities, a late planting season in 2008, and the skyrocketing price of crude oil. And then things, says Daryl Good, fell apart in the month of September.
Well, they really do. I mean, as we became aware that the crops were going to be of decent size, obviously prices began to erode, and petroleum prices had started to come down as well. But, you know, in early September, we were still, what, at $5 corn and equivalent price of soybeans. So we say, yeah, the market has come down a couple dollars a bushel as supply is now looking to be more abundant. And we appeared to be leveling off at that new lower price level, but still what most people would consider to be profitable levels and probably acceptable levels for the 08 crop in terms of a farm price. And then that all changed kind of mid-September with the recognition that we had serious problems in the financial markets.
That changes in mid-September. The grain gets put in the bin, corn and soybeans, that is, and then prices deteriorate right through Thanksgiving, and not just a little, substantially. Not back to levels we were at in 2002, 3, 4, but then substantially lower than they had been and what most people expected was even possible.
Right. We did go in the cash market sub $3 corn at the bottom. And as I mentioned, I think briefly, soybeans under $8 a bushel. And as you point out, historically, we would have considered those to be good prices. But in the new higher cost regime that we're now in, those were, at that level, were certainly below break even for many producers. So there was a bit of a panic at that point, and some folks began to forecast even much lower prices. I even saw some analysts talking about LDP payments maybe on corn, that way we're going to get that cheap. And farmers did respond by saying, look, this is probably undervalued. Let's not panic sell at this point. Let's store it. We did see a lot of movement of both corn and soybeans into the CCC loan program, saying that's a relatively low-cost way to finance holding this inventory. And so we kind of end the year, I think, seeing some price strength based on that holding, certainly some basis strength as farmers are holding pretty tight. But also thinking, you know, we're now back to prices that are a little more reasonable in terms of value, and really questioning how much additional strength we might expect here in the next month or two, thinking that prices have leveled out a bit for now.
Let's talk about the connection between crude oil and the price of corn. Over various conversations that we've had over the years, over the last 18 months, I think many university economists have come to the belief that they're connected, that they hooked up at some point. There was a time, I think, that the connection was pretty simple, or thought to be pretty simple, maybe, that if you had $90 corn or $90 crude, you'd have $4.50 corn. If you had $150 crude, you'd have $7.50 corn. Kind of the you know, it was half of whatever the price of crude was. I think maybe there's been work done here in this college in ACES that suggests that it's there's more to it than that. That you have to look at the RBOB and the price of ethanol and crude oil, and then you can come up with the price of corn. But how connected are they, and where do they disconnect? How do they function together? I know it's still early in the stage of this game, so maybe we don't know, but right. What kind of connection is there?
Well, the argument runs like this, that you know, ethanol use of corn is a major use of corn now, and at the margin, the argument was that's where the value of corn would be established. So the argument was you start at crude oil price, that then translates into a wholesale price of gasoline. Then you can calculate an equivalent price of ethanol based on its energy value relative to gasoline plus the blender's tax credit. And then the value of ethanol would indicate what price ethanol producers could afford to pay for corn. So the argument was you go crude, gasoline, ethanol, corn. And for a period of time, really most of 2007, first half of 2008, or longer, that relationship held fairly tightly, although correlations are not perfect. At a given level of crude oil, for example, gasoline prices do vary somewhat. It's not a perfect correlation. And for a given level of gasoline, ethanol prices don't correlate one for one. And similarly, for a given price of ethanol, corn prices vary a little bit around that. So as you go from crude to corn, there is a correlation, but it's not perfect, and there is some noise in that. But it held fairly well for about an 18-month period, 2007 into 2008. The correlation between those were fairly strong. But now as we got into late 2008, what we saw when crude oil and gasoline prices broke really hard, ethanol prices did not come down nearly as rapidly as those prices. And the argument was that we got into a situation where the renewable fuel standards, the mandates, became binding, that ethanol blenders found themselves in a situation where they were required to buy and blend ethanol to meet the renewable fuel standards, regardless of price, that they had to pay for it. And the argument goes, well, They'll have to pay whatever price of ethanol it takes to keep the ethanol producers in business, because they need, they're required to use the ethanol. So I think we did see several things happen late 2008. The relationship between crude and wholesale gasoline, that relationship deteriorated a little bit as the crack spread varied a lot. And then we broke a little bit the connection between gasoline and ethanol. And then the relationship between ethanol and corn, that relationship was not as tight either. So while the whole argument holds together, it's not a perfect correlation. There's a lot of noise in that. There's a lot of other things that influence price of all those commodities. It's, but as we move back into 2009, and if the energy prices have bottomed, and we're starting a new year on mandates and the levels there, we may see those relationships come back into a little stronger relationship. I think the big question is going to be a lot of talk now about the blending wall as we move up and get closer and closer to having 10% of our fuel supply already in the form of ethanol. How do we expand ethanol use? Do we actually hit a wall where everything is blended to 10%, and now what do we do? Can we expand ethanol any further? I think that's going to be the question that's answered in 2009.
Interesting. So it seems that there's kind of a moving target floor on the price of corn based off crude, but because it's moving and fluctuates with other things, you can't really give a price tag to it like we used to be able to give a price tag to the floor, right?
That's right. And we also have to recognize that there are other users of corn besides ethanol producers, so importers of corn are going to have something to say about the price of corn, regardless of energy prices. Livestock producers are going to have something to say about the price of corn, regardless of what's going on in the energy market. So that's why we, you know, for a period when ethanol production was expanding so rapidly, that's kind of where value was being established. But now, the influence of other users is probably stronger.
And then the second part of that would be, if I'm thinking of this properly, when you get to the blend wall, that floor would lower as the blend wall becomes a smaller percentage of overall production of corn, given that production tends to go higher year in and year out on trend. So right. That, right?
I mean, if at some point we cap ethanol use of corn, we say, you know, we're at the mandate and we're at the blend wall, we're not expanding ethanol use, then value of corn is going to decouple a little more, I think, from its energy value. It'll be more determined by other users of corn.
Should make for an interesting 2009, 10, 11, 12, 14, 13, 14, 15, and 16.
Yeah, I don't think we're in for any period of stability at all in these markets because of not only the demand issues, but annually the supply concerns that we're going to see come and go, I think will add to the volatility of these markets.
Daryl, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Daryl Good, recorded Wednesday of this week, and that wraps up this January 2nd edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.